wondering, it's the same old you with the same old name. Catherine, you're older now, everything's the same.
Hello, this is Tom Campbell, host of a series of interviews with local band members and music industry professionals from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. The following interview is with Mike Holm and Dick Erickson from The System. Hello, this is Tom Campbell. Today is June 10th, 2012, and I'm talking with Mike Holm and Dick Erickson from The System. Mike? Would you please tell us your full name, your hometown, and your date of birth, please?
Michael John Holm, 1225-49, beautiful green Edina, Minnesota.
Dick?
Richard Allen Erickson, October 9th, 1950, born in Richfield, Minnesota.
And where did you guys go to school, and what year did you graduate from high school?
I graduated from Edina High School in 1968.
And I went to Hopkins High School in 1968.
Okay, and what was your first experience with local bands? Had you been out to see any of the local rock bands in town?
I'd been out to see the Underbeats, the Del Counts, and countless other groups. I used to forge a note from my mom to get into the Safari Club.
Okay. Mike?
Yeah, I used to see a few bands out at Danceland in Excelsior. The Vogues, I think, was my first band that I ever saw.
The national band?
The national band, Vogues. Mm-hmm. And then just other clubs, Bobby's out in Mendota and a few other clubs around town.
Okay, and Dick, when did you first start playing in a band?
I was asked to be in a band in when I was about 14, and that was with Dave Rivel, who was one of the founding members of The System. At that time, it was you just had like a little basement band, and Dave was good friends and neighbors with Casey Jones's son. And his Casey Jones's son, Roger Awesome was Casey Jones. His son said to Dave, "Hey, my dad said if we put a band together, we can play at all the places where Casey Jones goes." So they had asked me to be in this band, and they needed a bass player. I had a guitar that I had played like in second and third grade, but then put it down because I got too involved in sports and what have you. But so I said, "Oh, well, that sounds like fun. I'll do that." But then Casey Jones's son decided to play bass, so I lost the gig. But Dave and I stayed friends, and then got together and played and knew one another.
Okay, Mike, how about you? What was your first experience playing?
Oh, I had a little group called Mike and the Invaders, and it was just me and some neighborhood friends of mine. That was Bill Cunningham, Dave Brown, Bobby Abularati, and me, and we just had acoustic guitars. We hadn't gone electric yet. We just did a couple birthday parties for some of the neighbor kids.
What did you play?
Guitar.
Do you recall where you purchased your first guitar and what kind it was?
My first guitar was given to my dad. It was a K. It was very inexpensive. He just brought it home one day, and there it was, and there it sat for many years.
Dick, do you recall your first bass guitar?
Yeah, my first guitar that I had when I was second grade was a kind of a cheaper Gibson version, and it was bought at H.R. Burt Music in Edina. I remember that. And then my first bass guitar was bought at Raleigh Williams Music in St. Louis Park, and it was a Harmony semi-hollow body bass.
Okay, and Mike, how did the system come about?
Well, a few of the guys have been gigging in a different band. Some of the players left, and they just decided to continue on and start a new group. And that's just how it came about.
Was that Jason and the Argonauts?
Well, yeah, but that was a different band from the system.
Right.
Some of the players came out of that band, but this wasn't a continuation of Jason and the Argonauts. That band dissolved, and then System came into being.
Okay, and who was in the original lineup of the System?
Well, that would have been me, Michael Holm, Jeff Parkinson, Dave Rivel, and Peter Brennelson, and Jim Richards.
Okay, and who was playing what at that time period?
I was playing keyboards, rhythm guitar, vocals, lead and backup. Jeff Parkinson was on drums. Jim Richards was on bass. And Dave Rivel was on guitar and vocals, lead guitar and vocals.
Did we get Peter?
And Peter Brennelson was the lead singer.
He played some guitar
also,
at that time, too.
Also, he had a French horn, too.
Yep.
A little French horn.
What time period did the system start?
About 1967.
67?
Yeah.
Okay. And Dick, how did you get a job with the system?
Well, I went to school with Dave Rivel. When the position opened up, he talked to me about it. Also, my mother was good friends with Peter Brennelson's girlfriend's mom. So I had been hearing about the system from that angle, too. So I was getting it from a couple different directions. And I heard about the, you know, they're going to need a bass player and everything. And Dave said, would you like to audition? And I said, well, that sounds great. Yeah. So that's how that happened.
You told me that you had actually two auditions in the same week.
Yeah, one with Sound of Soul. I think I did what a lot of guys did at those days. You put your name up at B Sharp Music on the bulletin board and see who calls and see what comes up. And I got a call from Mark, who I can't remember Mark's last name right now, but he was the trumpet player in Sound of Soul and the leader. So I went and auditioned for that band, and they were over in St. Paul, which seemed a lot further away than it does now. But it was a really fun audition. It went really good. But I decided on the system because I knew some of the guys in the band. I really liked the variety of the music. And the band was really into vocals. I really liked the vocals of the Hollies and the Beatles and those kind of groups. And so because I could do rhythm and blues with the system and everything else, I thought the system was a natural choice. And of course it was, you know, friends and fairly close to where I also lived. So convenient too.
Okay. And do you recall the time period, Dick, when you joined the band?
Yes, it was summer of 1967, I believe.
Okay. And do you recall your first job playing with the band?
It was at the Parkway Ballroom in Foley, Minnesota. And I had set up my wall and sack reel-to-reel tape recorder to just tape the band and make sure my parts I learned were coming together and what the, you know, and just record for the purpose of the band. And I remember beer glasses smashing on the microphone. It was a wild place.
Okay. You mentioned earlier the band played with the Everly Brothers. Mike, what do you recall about that job?
It was very exciting to play with the Everly Brothers because they were a big name. Everybody knew them, even though I think it was their success had been kind of waning at the time. Of course, the brothers might have been scrapping between themselves, which they've been known to do a lot. But for us, being so young, it was a real thrill to play with them at the prom center.
Do you recall if there was a large crowd for that event?
Oh, yeah.
Really large crowd. We got connected with this organization called the VIP Club, and it was two gentlemen that were businessmen and decided to start a singles club. They hired us for all sorts of events, and this was their big production. So they rented out the prom ballroom, hired the Everly Brothers, and also the Mob from Chicago was on the bill. So it was System, Mob, and Everly Brothers, and we filled that ballroom, and it was a lot of fun.
Was the System being booked by an agent at this time?
Yeah, we were.
David Anthony.
Yeah. Okay. Our first agent.
That was in the summer of 67. Did the band play with any other national bands at that time period?
Yes, we played with the Left Banke, who had a couple of big hits, Pretty Ballerina and Walk Away Renee, during that year. And we played with them up at the Tent in Old Hayward, Wisconsin. It was a wonderful venue with set up next to old train cars where the band would change clothes and get ready for the show.
What do you recall about the concert, Mike?
It was the first time with the Left Banke. We played with them twice. One later on at University of Minnesota Homecoming. But the first time in Hayward, to tell you the truth, I was a little disappointed because I didn't hear the orchestra and it didn't sound like the record.
They didn't have strings.
No strings. Just a four-piece and that's when I started realizing that bands don't, when they go on tour, they don't bring a string section or a horn section with them like you hear on the record. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it was a fun time, good crowd.
Yeah, I do remember us really being impressed with the band, though, because they did have a very unique sound, and even though the orchestration wasn't there, it was a solid band with really nice vocals, and it impressed us enough that when we got back to town, we went and bought their album and learned a sizable number of songs from their album because we thought their music was really good.
Do you recall which songs the System learned?
Yes, we learned, I think we'd already been doing Walk Away Renee, but we learned Pretty Ballerina, She May Call You Up Tonight, I've Got Something on My Mind, and Shadows Breaking Over My Head, all from the same album. It was a kind of an interesting band. They were doing what I think was termed, or we termed, broke rock, and that's where we really made use of Peter playing French horn and Michael picking up the German block flute. And it really kind of gave the band a really different sound than most of the bands around town were doing. Everybody else was going a little more edgy music, and here we're going with this kind of baroque thing. Mm-hmm. And along with the variety of music we were doing, it worked well for us.
During this time period, what clubs did the System play in town and out of town?
Well, we played at Magoo's and New City Opera House, as most bands did, and that was a wonderful scene. Purple Barn in Eden Prairie or over in that area, that was a fun place. Purple Cigar in St. Louis Park, Prison in Burnsville, Casino Royale in Fridley, Someplace Else in Robbinsdale, Kaufman Union we played at quite a bit over at the University of Minnesota. The C Club up in Duluth. We also did lots of shows at the Blazer up in Nisswa, during the summer, during vacation time. George's Ballroom in New Ulm, the Parkway, of course, in Foley. The New Munich Ballroom, we were their biggest draw there. And why there, I don't know, but it worked well for us, and it was so we played there a lot. We did the armories up in Fergus Falls, Wadena, Hibbing, Virginia, all around the Iron Range. We did a lot of armory shows that were produced by various people. I remember Rudy Spoler was one of the guys up in the Iron Range that produced a lot of the shows. Matter of fact, I remember driving up there and doing that with the Joker's Wild. And the Tower in Austin was another popular place. Piers Funhouse in Piers, Minnesota, was another crazy place. Close to Foley, another rowdy spot. The Pines in Bloomer, we played Bloomer, Wisconsin. We played there a lot. That was a very good place for us to play. Did all sorts of high schools and colleges. We were really popular at those places. We system dressed up more than a lot of bands did. We used to go to Old Town Chicago and buy suits and kind of give ourselves a more dressed up contemporary look. And at the high school and college, people liked that. Oh, here are these nice young men all dressed up. And of course we were. University Club in St. Paul, we played at a lot. Rice Lake Ballroom, Beloit, Wisconsin Teen Club. Could go on, but that's gives you a good representative selection there.
Mike, did you have a favorite place that you enjoyed playing at?
Yeah, in the early days, I really, really liked Robbinsdale, Someplace Else. You know, we were all cutting our teeth. All the bands were pretty much cutting their teeth at the same time, and that was just a really nice club. Fun to play. It's one of my favorites.
Oh, it was a really good crowd. It seemed like it was a good location. People like come in there.
Yeah.
So what happens next in the life of the system?
Well, in the spring of 1968, there was kind of a disagreement between some members of the band, and Jeff Parkinson, who had been the leader of the band, and Pete were kind of not quite agreeing on things, and one thing led to another, and so Jeff left the band, got a new drummer named Gary Nelson to replace him, and Pete Brynelson took over as leader of the band.
Was there a change in the music at this time?
A little bit. That kind of evolved a little bit. Gary was a little bit more aggressive drummer, so that lent itself to the band getting into some more, a little more harder edged music. But we did that, but we still kind of held on to kind of the variety that we'd been doing too.
Mike, how would you describe the change in the music with this change in the lineup?
Well, like Dick said, Gary had more of an edge to him, and also the music was changing at that time too. Mm-hmm. The new music that was coming out that everybody, you know, was covering was changing, and all the music seemed to take on a more of an edge to it. We didn't lose our identity. We were still the system that people had come to know, just with a few more edgier tunes.
This is the start of the psychedelic era as well. Did you do any psychedelic type songs?
Yes, we besides the, you know, popular music, the underground music thing was going on, and I remember Diamond Time with on KDWB at midnight, and they'd play all the underground music that you wouldn't hear on the top 40 radio. And I was just thumbing through some record albums at the store, and came across this album called Fever Tree. It was the name of the band. And for some reason, I just thought, well, this looks interesting. Thought I'd take a chance. Put down my $8 and bought the Fever Tree album. And we listened to it and decided to pick up, what was the name of that song that we did from the Fever Tree album?
Mike? Imitation Situation.
Imitation Situation. And that ended up developing into kind of a big production psychedelic rock song that we did. And Gary started his fire stick routine with that, where he soaked drum mallets in lighter fluid. That was the big production number for us.
So he would light the drum mallets on fire.
Yeah, he'd spray a little lighter fluid on everything around him, and but soak the mallets. The mallets kept going, and then he'd have to put them out every once in a while. They wouldn't go out, but he'd get them out eventually.
Did the appearance of the band change with the change in the music at this time?
I'd say we went from, kind of a suited look to a little bit more of a, like Dave, for instance, I think he was the most notable person. He had a king coat.
A king coat,
like a full-length king coat with the big silver buttons on it and all the embroidery and everything. We watched him sweat to death every night, but it looked really cool. At that point, we were going down to Old Town, Chicago, and, you know, getting suits with, kind of the Edwardian look with the ruffled shirts and all that kind of thing.
Old Town Chicago was where?
Rush Street area of downtown Chicago. Artsy area, but also kind of a fashion district. You know, there was a lot of, there were clubs down there. There was a lot of music going on in Old Town, but it was a fashionable area, and arts area.
So the band had jobs in Chicago, right?
Well, the closest we got to performing in Chicago was actually in Beloit, Wisconsin, if I remember correctly. I don't think we ever played in Chicago.
Okay.
But we went there because the selection for clothing around the Twin Cities was pretty much, for getting into something different and stylish, was pretty much limited to Kiefer's downtown, Minneapolis, and, there's a couple other places, but...
Nate's.
And we thought, people got to be getting these cool clothes someplace, and so we thought, well, they got to be in Chicago. I remember one time when we played in Beloit, you just jogged my memory. The way we got into the clothing thing in Chicago was... We played in Beloit, Wisconsin, and Dave Rivel talked me into staying overnight there and taking a bus to Chicago, and the other guys drove back home, and we went down to Old Town, and Dave and I just cruised around through Old Town and saw what was going on down there and came back and gave a report, and then then we all jumped in the van and went down.
So you were looking for a unique look.
Well, we'd heard about Old Town Chicago and that it was a happening place. So that's why we went there initially, Dave and I. You know, Dave said, hey, we got to go down to Old Town. So, okay. So we just did this adventure. Then we flew home because Dave was really, really into airplanes, and he knew the schedule for every airline going everywhere. And so he had it all figured out.